Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is the Clone Wars Report.
Boom, 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 boom.
The Drums of Truth, or Truth Half Revealed. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and the person making the great drum noises with their mouth is Ken Knapsack.
Yeah, and he's taking a swig of an energy drink he needs. hey, everybody, happy to be here for this.
We are very happy to be here. It has been a long and wonderful road as we rewatch all of the arcs of the Clone Wars. As the Clone Wars show goes on, the arcs become larger. We've been discussing lots of 3 episodes and 4 episodes. And this, in the 6th season, is one specific episode that I think of is that whole Sifo Dyas thing. Mm. This is season 6, episode 10, The Lost One, written by Christian Taylor and directed by Brian Kalin O'Connell. Do you think of this episode in your mind, Ken, is that whole Sifo Dyas thing?
I 100% do. And I was kind of surprised to realize it was only one episode. I thought this was more. Really did.
Right. I always remember bits and pieces of this episode and then am reminded of the way they all fit together. And I think, you know, going through it in this way will help keep some of it in my mind. Are you ready for the summary?
I am.
Okay. Once again, even though it's one episode, failed to keep it short. There's a lot of information in this episode. Here we go. Old truths emerge. Or do they? The Jedi detect a signal that leads Jedi Master Plo Koon and the Wolfpack to the crashed T-6 shuttle of the dead Jedi Master Sifo Dyas. Reporting the find to the Council, the Jedi compare notes in a burst of exposition. Sifo-Dyas was once a member of the council, but he was removed due to his extreme views. Sifo-Dyas was convinced war was coming and the Republic needed an army. Kenobi confirms the Kaminoans indeed told him it was Sifo-Dyas who ordered the army without the knowledge or consent of the Jedi or the Senate. Seeking to discover the truth, the Jedi confer with archivist Jocasta Nu. She shares that Sifo-Dyas was sent to negotiate a truce between warring Felucians, but his efforts failed and he was killed. However, the rest of the file is sealed by the Office of the Supreme Chancellor. Obi-Wan and Anakin Skywalker are dispatched to Felucia, where they discover Sifo-Dyas' body was cremated and he was allegedly on Felucia with a second Jedi. Yoda confers with Palpatine, who claims complete ignorance, telling Yoda these events were before his time. So Yoda seeks out Palpatine's predecessor, Finis Valorum. The former chancellor tells Yoda he secretly tasked Sifo-Dyas to negotiate with the criminal syndicate run by the Pikes on the planet Obadiah. A war was brewing as the Pikes gained more control over the spice trade. Valorum kept the mission a secret so his political rivals would not attack him for negotiating with criminals. Sifo-Dyas was accompanied not by a second Jedi, but Valorum's aide, Silman. But before Sifo-Dyas and Silman could complete the task, the Jedi Council sent them from Obadiah to Felucia. Meanwhile, Palpatine, in his guise as Darth Sidious, demands Dooku tie up this loose end, force-choking him over the hollow call as punishment for Dooku's clumsiness. Armed with more insight, Obi-Wan and Anakin arrive on Pike, get drinks, and see the seal of Valorum's office, which once belonged to Silman, hanging from the Pike leader Lom's neck. Lom spins the true tale. He was contacted by a man named Tyrannus to kill Sifo-Dyas. The Pike shot down Sifo-Dyas' ship, gave his body to Tyrannus, and kept Silman alive for insurance against the mysterious Tyrannus. Lom now makes a deal with the Jedi. They can have Silman in exchange for forgetting the Pike treachery. Silman, mind broken, slowly spills what he knows. He and Sifo-Dyas were betrayed, but the Pikes were not ultimately responsible. It was someone much more powerful, someone who wanted to be Sifo-Dyas. Before Silman can reveal more, Dooku arrives and murders this poor, haunted man. Obi-Wan and Anakin duel with the Dark Lord. The Pikes join the fight, identifying Dooku as the man known as Tyrannus. Obi-Wan is shocked, but Dooku sneers. He told Obi-Wan everything he needed to know back on Geonosis. Dooku kills Lom and escapes. Obi-Wan and Anakin report to the Council, armed with the knowledge that the clone army was created by their enemy. The Jedi wrestle with how to proceed. Mace fears that if this knowledge becomes public, the people will lose all faith in the Jedi Republic and the war effort. Fully aware they're being manipulated by the mysterious Sith Lord, Yoda feels the Jedi have no choice but to play his game. The sad, ominous ending. And drums. What does sad drums sound like, Ken?
Bum, 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 bum.
Exactly, exactly. What was your overall reaction to this episode? Love it, like it, struggle with it? Where do you go?
Man, I really liked this one when it was finally released in March of 2014 with the lost sessions here, the lost season. I loved this viewing. Prior viewings found me kind of loving this from the perspective of, what happened with that? Oh, that's right. And I do think this episode is kind of a fun, let's finally answer that. Because, again, they got the chance. There was a thought maybe they we'd never see this. So I just kind of carried that forward in my memory. But when you watch this, especially when we get to some of the themes and some of the stuff you're seeing here, this is a real haunting episode, and it's frustrating for the Jedi and frustrating as a fan of the Jedi, and how they're just absolutely trapped in this war, trapped in with what's going on, and it's haunting, and I love what this episode's doing then.
Yeah, I really like it. I remember being thrilled when I started watching it. It's like, oh, we're dealing with it. We're finally acknowledging this sort of Sifo-Dyas question of exactly what happened and how much, you know, have the Jedi tried to unravel this thread of who exactly did order the clones. So I really, really like it. Really enjoyed rewatching it. It is dark and sad and tragic in our long journey of discussing justice for the Jedi, that they get into this war with good intentions, but those fall apart. Well, we're getting to the fall apart times, right?
Yeah.
This episode is definitely, it is powerful and painful because of that. I think as an episode, it does feel to me like an episode where they really had some interesting choices of, like, we've got this. Mm-hmm. What was then the final season? What do we want to include? you know, to wrap it up, what do we want to include tone-wise? And this one really feels like, hey, this has been on the list to deal with that whole Sypha Diaz thing. So let's do it in one episode. So it does feel a little rushed. There is a lot of exposition of person goes to this place and says things. And even some moments where I feel like the Jedi are telling one another things that they probably already know.
So I
don't mind. It doesn't make it a terrible episode. But compared to other Clone Wars episodes, it does feel a little rushed, a little focus on just getting across information. So I think if it was about something else, I think that would bug me. But because it's about something so vital and interesting to the Star Wars story, I'm thrilled and intrigued every time I watch it. Which to me, I guess, is a testament of like there are rules in writing, like there are guidelines of don't rush to things too much. Don't just have people talk about what they found out. Sit with them and watch them discover it. You know, be more in the moment. Like there are a ton of kind of standard writing notes that one could give this episode, and yet I'm thrilled by it because it's an important part of the story. In the moments where people do actively discover something in the moment and are emotionally affected by it, are really powerful.
Yeah, no, there's some great stuff all the way through, and I don't disagree with any of your thoughts on it there. And I think in some ways it is this like, hey, you know, remember you had that question as the Sypha Diaz of it all. Here's the answer, and the answer is just the answer. This is what it is, and you can now take that answer and apply it to all other aspects of the Jedi and the Fall and the Big War and the Clone Wars. And I think it just finally confirmed some stuff, and I think it serves that purpose indeed. But especially in season 6, which has these wonderful, big, important arcs, and we got the big Yoda one coming up next. This one does stand out as kind of this, like, oh yeah, oopsie daisies, Sypha Diaz, here you go.
Yeah. And I think when I was watching it this time, I was just kind of imagining of like, what would it be like if it was paced a little bit more like Clone Wars episodes, where like the first episode was Obi-Wan and Anakin on Felucia, right? Kind of spacing the story out a little bit more. Yeah. But that said, I wanted to acknowledge that thought I had, but I still find this episode thrilling and exciting to talk about, which we're going to do right now. The moral of this episode is what is lost is often found. How did you feel about that? Can you use it when coaching baseball?
You could absolutely use that in life and coaching baseball. I looked at it from a different angle, a little more somber, a little more sad. The truth was lost, but it was found too late, though. Too late.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that what is lost is often found is a nice moral. It wouldn't have been a nice moral on a show that is partially, at least, sometimes described explicitly for children, to have a moral that's just like wounds fester.
Yeah.
That's almost the way I take that, of like the buried stuff is going to come out eventually, you know. And what happens, the buried things come out this episode. Any other thoughts on this moral?
No, pretty direct. I love wounds fester is the correct way to look at it.
Remember, kids, wounds fester. I don't think that would be an improvement on what is lost is often done. Let's get into the big ideas, the themes. What ideas were at stake in this episode for you? Where did you go?
The big theme for me is this idea of darkness just swallowing everything here. The shroud of the dark side, right? This thing that Yoda's been warning us about. And even just the visuals of this episode starts with, I actually really like the opening sequence, but it's this sandstorm that's just swallowing everything there. Plo Koon and the wolf pack walking through that sandstorm surrounding them. Nightfall with the ominous clouds around the Jedi Temple. Obadiah, dark and shadowy. Not a lot of sunshine. Not a lot of sunny days, not a Dex's Diner in these episodes. Just darkness absolutely swallowing everything that's happening here.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think the darkness is very literal. I kind of thought of it as you know, buried truths, obscured truths. And like everything is sort of being covered and locked. And a lot of that is visual and literal, but it's also what's actively going on in the plot. And I think it all builds up between the visual and the active, you know, plot beats to give you this feeling of nothing stays buried forever. Wounds fester, like that thing that you thought you buried in your backyard is crawling out, you know, and revealing itself. But it also gives it this whole thing, this sort of ominous vibe that made me feel like the stillness before a jump scare in a horror movie. We're like, you know, you're in that scene. The person's going through the house and you know something's going to get them, but you don't know where or when or from what angle. Like, they got to open every cupboard, right? And that's kind of what's going on with the Jedi, of like, they know that there's something rotten and they're trying to find it and they can't, you know?
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. Palpatine's about to jump out and go, boo!
Order 66. Yeah, and I totally agree with you. It's the in the images of the ship buried in that sand, and the sand so thick you can't see anything, right? The literalness of a locked file of Sifo Dyas, and just that sort of the glaring red of you can't go farther. Going as far to, like, you know, not to moments that are happening now, but to, like, what was going on in the government even around the time of Phantom Menace, that Valorum is having these secret missions that he can't tell anybody about because he's afraid of, you know, how it will make him look or how his enemies will use it against him. It's like, even well-intentioned things, like Valorum's trying to stop a massive war arising over a drug. It's not a bad thing, but he has to bury it out of fear, you know? And I think all of that, including great images of, you know, the shadows that you described in the Senate, the Jedi Council on Obadiah, it all builds to what to me is like the big gut punch of this episode, is the Jedi are all about bringing things to the light. And here's all these things that are all these kind of upsetting images and ideas of things being buried. And at the moment that you would kind of expect the Jedi to go, like, great, let's bring it to the light, the Jedi are the ones going, shove it down in the shadows, bury it in the backyard, right? The
swallow it. Yeah.
Swallow it, you know, and it's about fear. I so appreciate in this Clone Wars rewatch that the Jedi are so getting into what will everybody think? Will the bad things that people think about us take our power away? A lot of it is political. A lot of times poor Mace is the one who says it. The direct quote here, if this was known that their enemy ordered the clone army, if this was known public confidence in the war effort, the Jedi and the Republic would vanish. There would be mass chaos. And Yoda says, cover up this discovery must. No one, not even the Chancellor, may know. How did that land with you when Yoda's like, bury it in the backyard?
It landed in a good way, but meaning it's bad. This idea too, you mentioned secrets and lies is this big kind of theme throughout it. And there's so many examples of this, and to have it all slide down there. I love how you're attaching this to fear, and how the Jedi are now in this place of fear, which is a place that they just don't thrive and they don't work well. I just love that. And again, just a long list of just secrets and lies. The original mission you mentioned, it was Sifo Dyas, a secret. Jedi, are happy to know all the Pike's secrets is a line that said Dooku, unaware of Silman, by the way. And the Pike's keeping that secret from Dooku, and how that's this banana peel he slips on. You know, Tyrannus Insidious and their plot, and this is where the Jedi are like, wait a minute, Tyrannus? That's you. I mean, the secrets just come to light, and just over and over and over again, all kind of flowing into the one you're talking about here, as the Jedi have to cover up the truth and fall deeper into the shadows.
Yeah. It's a great point about all of the different layers of everybody hiding things and people just getting little bits and pieces of the truth. I just think that this is one of the episodes where, Yoda obviously expressed that the Clone Wars is not a victory. The Shroud of the Dark Side has fallen. We talk about that a lot. I'm sure we will as we continue wrapping up our discussion of the Clone Wars. But this moment where it's like, it's understandable of like, this war is dragging on. We thought we could end it fast. We always knew that there's probably another Sith Lord lurking out there. We're looking for them. But we don't want to kind of give into too much fear and paranoia and like, you know, line up the Senate and give them a force test, you know?
Yeah.
So you could understand the Jedi's perspective, right? But it leads them to this place where I feel like you can watch this episode and just go like, no, you're clinging to your own. This is the hubris that people talk about. We talk a lot about that. There are some people, some fans who are pretty hard on the Jedi or think the Jedi way is wrong. And we come at it from the point of like their initial principles, their main principles, the ones that Ahsoka embodies and clings to are great. This is the moments like this is where they break, right?
Yeah.
Of giving in to that fear instead of saying, this is going to be really hard. It's going to upset everything, but people have to know the truth, right? If they're just like, we're taking this to the Senate, the people might kick the Jedi Order off of Coruscant.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. We have to expose this and maybe just say, stop the war, you know?
Yeah, no, it's always about this organizational failure versus not a failure of ideas and ideals. You know what I mean? And I think that's what we always want to focus on here. So, yeah, I agree with you. Well said there.
Yeah. Other big picture for me is the hubris idea that I think tracks through not just the Jedi, but lots of people, and just kind of gets pointed out. They talk about how the council rejected Sifo Dyas's ideas, which, like, understandable, they can come off as paranoid. Like, there's a great war coming and we need an army, and nobody wants an army because you raise a fist, you get a fist back, right? That's the whole reason you want to negotiate instead. That's the plot of Attack of the Clones. Jedi and Padme don't want an army. So understandable that the Jedi were like, no, Sifo Dyas. But obviously now they're in a situation where there's a war and they have an army. And I love that Obi-Wan says, well, it's not the first time we've been wrong recently, is it?
It's a great line.
Great line. And I kind of took that as like, you know, justice for Obi-Wan's perspective on Ahsoka. I feel like that's an Ahsoka comment.
Yeah. Like she's over there like this and then this and then you're wrong about this. They've been wrong about this. Yeah, absolutely.
It's really fun to think of everything that Obi-Wan might have in mind. But I think there's kind of another moment of hubris with the rarely seen conflict between Sidious and Dooku. Like, you know, Dooku's pushed back and said, yeah, I'm not buying Asajj Ventress as your apprentice.
Yeah.
She's getting too powerful. Get rid of her. But Dooku's like, cool, okay. And he quietly goes, this is one of the few moments of open conflict between them, right? Where Dooku, who's always like, I'm right. I've got a deep voice and I'm rich and I'm faster than you. Ha ha ha. I'm better than everyone. You know, to see him be called clumsy and punished is like a real moment of hubris.
Yeah, again, going to the sleep of darkness, swallowing everything. You know, the end is nigh for Dooku, right? And we talk about there's so many times during the Clone Wars where his end is broadcast to him just as much as Anakin's is shown to him, and how he's still surprised at the end. But here it is, pretty clear, and the hubris that he thinks he can overcome that. It's part of the Sith way, I guess.
Yeah. And then for me, the big moment of hubris of I love the idea that Jedi should bring things to light. Maybe tactically every once in a while they keep something secret. Fair enough. But this is a real like, ooh, shove the truth back in the box. But the other part of that is the hubris of we're Jedi. You know, a lot of bad things could happen, but we're not gonna fall, right? Like whatever this is, we'll see it through. The specific lines of dialogue there, where Yoda talks about valiant men the clones have proven to believe in them we must. Win the war swiftly we must before our enemies' designs reach completion, whatever they may be. There's a real certainty there. Mace even questions, like, you sure that's the right path? And Yoda says, no, the only path designed by the Dark Lord of the Sith, this web is. Mm-hmm. For now, play his game we must. This is so fascinating because I think in some ways it's where Yoda has kind of always been with this war of like, this is not great. As soon as it starts, he thinks the Shroud of the Dark Side has fallen. But Jedi and Padme and everybody thinks like, well, we'll get through it quickly, you know. But now it's been going on and on and on. Now there's no ambiguity. Like, this is not a straightforward war. You are being manipulated. And the hubris comes in when it's like, the truth is in your face that you're being manipulated. And they're still like, well, we'll power through.
Yeah.
Because that's how good we are, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little. Yeah, no, I think that's a great example of the big Jedi hubris there. And again, just the trap falling into, and the Shroud of Darkness falling around them. They can't escape, and it's just frustrating, sad, haunting.
Yeah, yeah. Did you find yourself upset with Yoda? Did you find yourself trying to be like, well, I understand where he's coming from, but like, how did you feel as a fan?
I can't say I was upset with Yoda. I just think this is Palpatine winning, right? This is how and why. And I don't think Mace is wrong here in the sense of, we've always talked about it. He's almost right, but execution might be wrong, or his end result, how he gets there might be a little wrong, or what he does with the information might be wrong. I don't think Yoda's wrong here. I think his final decision of this is the best way. He says it, you know, the best way. No, but the only way. I just think they have no other option. And I love how it's followed up by, you know, a belief in the clones, right? They've come this far. They know the clones, and we're going to have to win this war. We're going to have to win it with them anyways. So we can't undercut them. And this is maybe what would happen if we were out there and, you know, hey, guess what? We didn't even recruit them. They showed up on our doorstep, a complete army. And now people don't believe in them and don't follow them or don't feel, you know, the whole thing kind of explodes all around them. So I think Yoda, they have to make this decision. And that's why I just keep going back to that term, that word, haunting. It's just a haunting feeling of if there's nothing they could do.
Yeah, I love what you're saying. And I know I was saying earlier like that they could have put a stop to everything. But you're right. Mace is bringing up big, legitimate concerns of like, would more people be hurt by us, you know, sounding this alarm? And I love the Yoda lines about like, OK, well, the first thing that's going to happen, let's play this out. If we tell everybody like, hey, turns out Sith Lord, I know not everybody in the galaxy is big on this, but
yeah,
or even knows what we're talking about. But there's evil wizards and, you know, we thought we took care of them, but not so much. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
They ordered these clones. What's the first thing that people are going to do is turn on the clones, right?
Yeah.
And it, like this connects right back to the first broadcast episode of Ambush where Yoda's like, you're individuals. You're unique in the Force. This is so about them valuing the clones and saying, well, okay, wherever they came from is suspicious, but they're not suspicious. They're, you know, valiant, loyal, individual beings.
Right. But and again, I think there's, yeah, and I think that's all true. That's why Yoda makes that decision. But just your point earlier, too, of like if the Jedi had said, time out, hey, everybody, we got to deal with this. I think it's what's why it's the original question of am I upset with Yoda at all or was affected by it? It's just I don't think they have any other option, which is this victory for Palpatine. This is where secrets and lies get you. There's that line from Silman, and, you know, he's obviously not all there, but all is deception, he says. All is deception. And how much that just goes through this episode. And so just, you know, you're now the Jedi are in the position where they kind of have to deceive. And you just kind of, you know, I feel for them all there, but I think at the end of the day, they have to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, what I really like about it is it really makes me question and think is like, I understand where they're coming from because of the whole justice for the Jedi thing of like, look, when you're presented with a problem, you face it, you confront it. And I can see the logic of like, okay, there's a manipulation here. We play it out to see what it is. So then we have that knowledge and we can address it. We don't want to unfairly put, you know, spread mass panic. We don't want to put the clone. We don't want like everyone in the galaxy to turn on the clones, you know,
right?
Because they did. It's not their responsibility. They didn't order themselves. They don't know, you know, all that stuff. I can really understand. I think then the other part of me says, like, when Yoda says no, the only path, right?
Yeah.
You think about the conversations of rigidity and you think about how much, you know, there had to have been other paths, right? There had to have been ways to say, we need to look into this. This is our true problem, not, you know, the war with the separatists. Is there a way to scale back into, you know, a position of defense in this war, you know, and not just be so confident that whatever the plan is, we'll deal with it, but rather say we need to look at all of the options. They cut off the thought process so quickly, you know?
Yeah, no, I really agree with that. It is a pretty, you know, cut and dry statement from Yoda, right? It's almost as if he's saying, all right, meeting over. This is good to go. And I think you're right. And I think that what you're saying too, it's like, I think a lot of times we, not necessarily us, but just the overall conversation from some of the stuff is canon, timelines, plots, lore, and what's the actual answer? And it's like, you know, dialogue is not facts and dialogue is not exactly how it could have, it's just, it's open to discussion. And it's, that's why I think this episode does really work for me, despite some of the stuff we've already talked about. But just like it is, just this trap they're in is so hard to get out of, and I love discussing that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think well said. It is a haunting trap. Any other thoughts on the themes and our ideas of this episode before we go to the bigger picture?
Yeah, one little beat, and I think it all just does tie into the bigger picture, and fear might just be the overall big picture here, right? I thought of this because Jocasta knew. We once again kind of have this idea of knowledge versus wisdom. Mm-hmm. And poor Jocasta Nu has to deliver the message again, right? She's always in the knowledge is the best side. It's a file. It's sealed. I guess we'll never know. And Kenobi, among others, having to seek the knowledge they need through, maybe some passive wisdom here. Just kind of on makes me think of our love of that Dexter Diner scene and why that Dexter's Diner scene is so important. And this intersection of knowledge and wisdom. Is something that comes up and how the Jedi Order is constantly, having to find their way through that.
No, yeah, I really like that, that this is, an episode where everybody has a little shard and our heroes are going around asking, having to have these face-to-face conversations, like all the little stuff with, we don't actually get to see it, but Obi-Wan being like, try and talk to the Felucians. Yeah. It's a really old dialect. I think that's what they're saying. I'm trying to chase down, the actual wisdom. Yeah. Of what is truly going on.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, and just, then we can probably bring it up in other points under discussion this episode, but just all that kind of going to your Tyrannus, and then I just love Dooku just going, I told you everything you needed to know on Geonosis all those years ago, Kenobi. You should have joined me. Sivanese understood. He saw the future. This is why he helped me. We did the Force Center scene by scene of that moment. We both love that moment for Kenobi and Dooku and the overall Star Wars story, but just, again, knowledge, wisdom, and determining which is the better path from that. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think we've already veered into some of this idea of how the themes of this particular episode reflect larger storytelling and morality of perspective of Star Wars. Where did you go with some of that?
I really do love the idea of fear. I think it all kind of slides into it, with darkness kind of being the overriding feel and vibe of this episode and all around. How do you get there, and how does darkness swallow everything completely, and when there's secrets and there's lies and there's machinations and you don't know how to get it because you lack the knowledge and you therefore need to rely on wisdom that maybe you can't see because you're also part of an order that does have these kind of end of meeting conversations. All that is fueled by fear of the unknown, fear of the end possible end result, fear of a choice you might need to make. So that's a big statement on the big Star Wars picture here and where the Jedi end up.
No, I really agree with you that you can really track fear is how Palpatine beats all of his opponents. He gets the Senate and the people of the galaxy to be afraid of the other, of those cruel separatists. So they give him all this power. He gets Anakin to fear losing Padme. So Anakin gives, Palpatine power over him, and he gets the Jedi into being afraid that there is no right move, right? Mm-hmm. So that they just keep playing along. And I think it really is fear of what might happen, maybe even probably. Like, I think that's what's so great about our discussion about, like, okay, well, are Mace and Yoda right? That, well, like, we can't just go tell everybody this because there'll be mass chaos, the clones will suffer, the galaxy will suffer. Is that absolutely true? Or is that them listening to their fear about the worst possible outcome and letting fear absolutely be in the driver's seat, and cut off even a conversation of, like, they don't even have the conversation of, like, what if we just told Padme and Bail and see what they knew and let them take it into their arena, the Senate, they're just like, nope, bad things will happen, make us look like idiots, shut it down.
and again, it's just it's both simple on the surface, but it's also deep of just no sunshine in this episode. Just that is not what you generally associate with the Jedi for light and life, right? The Jedi getting there because of the fear of the whole situation.
Yeah. Last thing for me is, we talk about it all the time because it is the story of the Clone Wars, but Yoda saying, in Attack of the Clones, the shroud of the dark side has fallen, begun the Clone War has. I love that it is literal in this episode. When he's in the office with the Chancellor, with Palpatine, Palpatine is literally casting a shadow on Yoda.
Yes.
Right? And I love this exchange of dialogue where Obi-Wan says to Yoda, "Did you have any success with the Chancellor?" And Yoda says, "As much success as usual, I'm afraid."
Yeah.
And how they see Palpatine grabbing for powers. They see Palpatine playing politics, and they're just like, Yeah, that's what happens in politics, you know, and they're so close, right? If they get to the point where Yoda's like, yeah, talking to that guy is useless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We all know that, right? and he's getting pushier about getting involved in our business and what's in his purview versus what is in ours. They're so close. I love it. Mm.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And yeah, we'll talk about that scene, too. It's some funny stuff in there, too.
Absolutely funny stuff. All right, with that, then, I think we shall take a quick break, and we'll talk about some of those fun moments in just a moment.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we are back to continue our discussion of Episode 10, Season 6, The Lost One, that whole Sifo Dyas thing. We are going to go to some of the fun action moments. There's definitely, for an episode that had a lot of investigating and discussing, there is still some big action at the end. What did you like, Ken?
Well, I start with the non-action moment. I've used it to talk about this theme of darkness and everything, but I love the opening scene with Plo and the Wolfpack in the sandstorm. It is, I don't know, it's something that when you would think about, oh, if they do a Clone Wars series, this is what I would want to see. Just, it has, it's ominous and haunting, like we said, but it just has that, like, we're in the middle of this war. It's hard to see straight. We don't know what's going on. I just really like that. So it's not action, but it had the tension of action's about to explode all around you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's got a great, it reminds me of Wrath of Khan, the discovery of Khan's ship, of like this
nice,
terrifying thing buried. And I do like the discovery of the lightsaber, such a great design of Sifo Dyas's lightsaber. And even when Plo Koon's showing it to the council and he's, you know, levitating it and turning it around, it's got this like it feels like every dead Jedi is a scar in this one in particular of like,
yeah.
We never fully understood. We never even got his body back, but we all believe he's dead.
Yeah.
It's really powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. Love that.
Yeah. I love, you know, Ken and listeners, and I've discovered more and more for myself how much I love it when people fall from high places in action scenes. There's a lot of great falling from a high place. But this was perhaps one of the best. Dooku's utterly casual. You are like dust, on my collar that I'm brushing off his force shove, and those two pike guards just go sailing over the bridge.
Pretty brutal. I'm just glad they weren't B1 battle droids this time.
I would have taken it as a callback to the movie if one of the pikes said, "Why?"
Why?
That would have been good. Yeah, and then we get into the actual fight, and there are a ton of great moments in there between Dooku, Kenobi, and Anakin, unless you have other beats.
I'm counting it as action, but Palpatine choke-punishing Dooku, just because you're right, we don't really see it that much, but also I just love that Palpatine is like, get on a Zoom call. What am I hearing? The Jedi are searching for safe ideas. What did you do? You messed up, buddy. And don't condone any bosses force choking their employees, by the way. But just loved everything about it. It was Palpatine at his scariest, so accounting it as action.
Oh, no, I think that's great. I love him calling it his clumsiness, and yeah, it really is like you put a TPS cover report on what?
Yeah.
Love it. Going into the fight, it is a bunch of great things. It's one of the things I always remember, and we're getting so close to Revenge of the Sith and the final conflict between these three. I really appreciated that the action was cool and told the story. I love that Kenobi always has a harder time with Dooku. I personally have the headcanon that for him, it's like this weird, he's kind of fighting Qui-Gon, that like he feels that connection. Dooku gets into Kenobi's head. Kenobi normally wins battles because he's really good at getting into other people's heads. He's a good combatant, but he's much better about figuring out like, what do you think the fight is about? What do I actually think the fight is about? You know, Savage Opress doesn't notice that I'm not trying to cut his head off. I'm trying to kick this leg, you know?
Yeah.
Lots of examples of that in Kenobi fights. And he's never in that headspace with Dooku. He's always just sort of like, it seems like he reverts back to like, I'm fast, I'm strong, I'm better. Because Dooku's got in his head that he's not. He's a disappointment to Yoda and Yoda and Qui-Gon.
Anytime he fights Dooku, it's the only time I really do laugh at the Sith Lords are our speciality line from Kenobi. The rest of the time, I think he's accurate. But this one, yeah, I think
great,
right.
A great line, and on average, he is correct. But against Dooku, no.
So
I like that there's great flowing kinetic fight, and I love that moment when Dooku is fighting the same way too, of like, get Kenobi away from me and concentrate on Anakin. He kicks Kenobi away. Kenobi teeters on the edge. Anakin, uses the force to pull Obi-Wan back. All these beats are going to be repeated in a different way in Revenge of the Sith. But then I love that it ends that Anakin has to let Obi-Wan go because Dooku almost cuts off Anakin's other arm.
Yes.
Which would have been like, Dooku being like, got them both,
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a great fight. I love, I always love watching Dooku fight with one arm behind his back. He's such a classy gentleman. That's why Palpatine, he's not clumsy. He's very classy.
He's so classy, but it is that great hubris of like, I can beat you both with one arm behind my back, literally.
In my sassy pajamas, yes.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other beat I picked out that I really liked is once Obi-Wan gets back into the fight, there's that moment where Anakin rolls away and Obi-Wan just leaps right over him to slash at Dooku.
Yeah.
Got a great rhythm going on. Any other beats that in particular within that fight?
I'm calling it the group force push from Dooku, where all the pikes come out and everything. He's just like woof and like pushes everyone. I just, maybe because of video games over the years, I just enjoy a good force push.
Yeah, and this is a great moment where Obi-Wan and Anakin do their big coordinated force push, and Dooku's like leaps out of the way, is like ha ha. Great
love
stuff.
That. Love that.
Go ahead, please.
I do love Dooku's escape, too, and just how he slices that ship. Yeah, real fun, action-y detail.
Yeah, and, actually, I do love that that moment is Obi-Wan says, I'll give you a boost. That Obi-Wan knows that Anakin's going to hold his own better with Dooku, and that he's not, there's no squabbling of like, I'll handle this. He's like, no, you go.
You go. I got you.
And it's a cool action move when he gives him the extra boost.
Yeah, I love that.
So let's move on then to moments of comedy, whimsy, weirdness. This was a dark episode, a haunting trap of an episode. And yet there are some moments that made me smile. Where did you go?
Well, we got to talk about Kenobi's exposition catch up and how somewhere Regolier is really jealous of Kenobi getting that moment. Your note up top of there's a couple moments of like, well, why wouldn't they know that? You're telling me they don't know that, and it's clearly for the audience. You can get caught up in that, but it is just kind of fun of literally Mace going, Obi-Wan, why don't you remind everyone of what happened in that movie?
Yeah, and like that one I can get behind even a little bit because that's a personal experience that Kenobi had. It's when they're discussing what happened to Sifo Dyas of like, I feel like every Jedi knows when a Jedi gets kicked off the Jedi Council, and the majority of those council members, or not majority, maybe, I don't know, I have to count and do the math. A lot of those council members were there. That was the one where it's like, you all know this about Sifo Dyas.
Yeah, I have to trace it and track it a little bit more, but you know, by now we're just so used to hearing the Pikes and the Pike Syndicate, but just even the fact that Yoda had those moments with Valorum of the Pikes, spice, it was fun though. It to me, it's just kind of fun Star Wars whimsy.
Yeah, for me, it's a fun thing to note because I do think, you know, exposition should be as gentle and accurate as possible, and it heightens things, but also sometimes people, I think, because they know that word, they over obsess on it.
Yeah.
Somebody could watch this episode, love it, and not realize that it, you know, broke these exposition rules.
Yeah, I agree with that totally.
One moment I liked is when Opo Rancisis and Saucy Tin, I can't even remember what bit of news they got, but they both just look at each other like, we're going to have to talk about that.
That's so great because we don't get a ton of Opo. We need more Opo.
We don't. He's added later, right? Yeah. In terms of designing him and adding him to the council. Love it. That look.
Yeah.
I think you went to the same place here with the Palpatine and Yoda beat, but maybe we'll see. Palpatine pretending not to remember Sifo Dyas's name, which of course makes perfect sense from Palpatine's perspective, but you know, Darth Sidious knowing that's a problem.
Yeah.
But just the way he draws out Sifo Dyas, like he forgot what the word building means and he's saying it that way and just uses up the absolute last bit of Yoda's patience. And he was like, yes, Sifo Dyas.
You're right. It's the second one. How do you say it? How do you say it?
Sifo Dyas.
It's so great. And then because of the BTS of that, I kind of was hoping retroactively, even though I know he doesn't, I wanted Sidious to be like, it sounds like a typo of a name, you know, how we got that name to begin with. So, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It is so funny and so well delivered by both actors. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. The first time it's the Sifo Dyas, and then he pretends to forget it again.
Yeah.
It's Palpatine, I think, at this point. Like, obviously, he's concerned about this and back on his heels, but even then, he's just like, I'm going to needle this, you know, my little green friend. And just annoy him out of my own personal joy.
It adds some weight to that little green friend moment, and just about how little and petty that line is too. Of just like, yeah, I hated you the whole time. Yeah.
Yes, he's been looking forward to this, my little green friend.
Yeah.
Another moment I like, not a surprise at all. Mm-hmm. Obi-Wan taking the drink offer from the Pike leader, Anakin being like real grumpy about it, and Obi-Wan being like, no, the best way to get results is to always say yes to a drink. I know we've been drugged before, drinking cocktails, very similar to this, Anakin, but I'm taking this glowing green martini. and then the overtop nature when Obi-Wan does his, you know, the negotiator stuff is like, no, let's take the drink, let's be friendly and toast a friendship. And then Lom's like, friendship?
Yeah.
The over-the-top cackle on friendship.
And just
beautiful.
Yeah, and Kenobi, ever the private investigator, classic detective type, just doing like the Columbo almost one more thing stop of the drink in question. And that drink is pretty cool. It's got like electricity surging through it or something. I love the design of that drink.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know what those are, but I want one, which is probably not wise, but man.
That's fair, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Glowing green martini, that would look nice in my hand. What are some other moments of comedy or whimsy or weirdness for you?
I just love it. This is such a Star Wars tradition we always highlight, but you have Tim Curry doing Palpatine at this point. And in the same episode, you have Chancellor Valorim and Chancellor Valorum, which is the movie established version. I just have this image of they're in a booth with Tim Curry, and he says Valorim, and they're like, it's Valorum. And he just goes, uh-huh, we're done here. Move on. And it reminds me of Palpatine again later on with Ian McDiarmid and Rebels going, Ash Shoka. Maybe that's Palpatine does this on purpose.
Maybe he mispronounces names to agitate people. Yeah, Ashoka Tano. Like, we've had this relatively recently. We talked about it in the Gathering arc where it is open season on how to pronounce the Wookiee youngling's name, right?
Yeah.
Of Gungi or Gungi. And for whatever reason, if it was time, if it was Star Wars, commitment to different people say names differently, it is clearly a thing that happens throughout the Clone Wars. So whether it's time or choice, it's certainly there.
It's certainly there. So I love that one there.
Last one for me. I liked it when Dooku shows up. I didn't like it when he chokes Sillman. That was sad. But when Anakin says, Dooku, for once you actually came to do your own dirty work, and Dooku says, sometimes things are just that important.
So I wrote that down too, and I love it. I think just you and I love Dooku, but it just there's just something about the that whole sentence. And he could say anything, but just sometimes things are just that important. It's musical. It has a melody to it, and it is such a Dooku line. I love that line.
Yeah, and just this picture, like, Dooku used to be out in the field. He got, taken by Hondo early on, and it feels like he's just kind of retreating to be more like, I got people to do my things. And he's really got that, like, well, this one is for the boss. Any other moments for you?
I don't want, I'm not poking fun at Soman. The poor guy's gone through too much there. I do like Anakin just doing that. We might have a problem here. It's just very real world.
Very, very real world. Yeah, and you get the sense that Soman kind of knows the heart of things, that maybe he would have spilled too much if Dooku hadn't got to him, but also like that it's a little turned around in his own mind. Poor guy.
Poor guy.
All right, so moving on then to canon lore, connection to other stories. Let's talk about Sifo Dyas himself. There is a lot more about his haunting visions, his relationship with prophecy, his friendship with Dooku in the audio story. And you can get the script book of Dooku Jedi Lost by Kevin Scott. I remember really enjoying all that stuff. Watching this episode made me really wish like, oh, wow, I wish I could just crack that script book open and read it all right now. But there's a lot of great stuff that lines up with this episode.
Yeah, and there's something in here that I think is great of just this. I think someone says it of Dooku wanted to be Sifo Dyas, and this root jealousy that's there, and just add some layers to it there. And I really like that.
Yeah, I really kind of took that is, Sifo is this like sort of jealousy, but also like the practicality of we're going to get him to order the army. And if not, somebody will pretend to be him.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's some nice I don't know if that's been ironed out in canon. As much as this clarifies things about Sifo Dyas, I think there's still room for fleshing out in modern canon and all that. And I hope that there's kind of a sequel to Dooku Jedi Lost that gets into some of this stuff.
We love that.
I wanted to be sure to bring that up. So great. Valorum or Valorum. I love just seeing him, right? Because especially, in the buildup to Phantom Menace, the actor was so beloved in the pop culture genre nerd circles I traveled from his many things, but from his role in Superman 2, that there's like, oh, Terrence Stamp, here we go. And And I know you and I both really like Valorum, so it was really great to see him again. And just as a bit of canon and lore for how things work, really awesome to see his fancy retirement penthouse with Coruscant Guard. Like, yeah, for getting pushed out of politics with a vote of no confidence. He's living well.
Yeah, a little bit of a golden parachute. Yeah, I loved it. And this is absolutely one of the things I remembered. And again, this was only released in 2014, which is a long time ago, but really not that long ago. And I remember just loving seeing him. I did not write down who did the voice for him, but it is, for a second, you're like, did they get Terran Stamp to do this? It's so good. That is
Ian Ruskin.
Yeah, Ian, great job. Love it. Love seeing old Finnis there. It worked for me as a fan of Phantom Menace. And yeah, just memories of grabbing the figure at Toys R Us and going, I got a Terran Stamp.
Right, right. That was the other thing I wanted to be sure to ask you about Sypha Diaz. The whole typo behind the scenes story that it was supposed to be Sidious who secretly ordered the army, and then this typo came up, and then Lucas was like, oh, that's more interesting. How do you feel about all that? Does it bother you?
No, I think he's right. And what a, hey, the Force spoke, you know, hey, look at this. If it had been Sidious, yeah, I mean, that, you could have made that work. You could make any what if work. But I kind of like it. And then this episode kind of drives that point home of then you can take it, you know, jealousy and the relationship with Dooku and Sypha Diaz and a Jedi going against the council. There's so much more with it. So, hey, turns out George, he might be right about some things sometimes.
I think so. I think there's a great little wrinkle to me that ended up being, you know, in improv and sometimes in writing, you talk about things becoming gifts. You know, you can look at something as it wasn't supposed to go that way. And then you can look at it as like, oh, but what does that open up? And I think particularly go into that Dooku Jedi Lost story where Sypho Diaz is a way kind of into Dooku's character more. What a gift.
Indeed. What a gift.
Final thing for me is just, you know, nothing in particular, but just the idea that this is another one of the moments where the Pikes and Obadiah get established and feels relevant now because we're going to return to Obadiah in season 7 of Clone Wars. But also just like the Pikes are killing it in live action, right? Between Solo and Book of Boba Fett. It's fun to look back on this episode and it feels different than the first time I watched it because the Pikes are a much bigger on-screen, live-screen thing.
Agreed that there's totally that feel. And I remember maybe overlooking them a little back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. Was there anything that we haven't talked about that you, or I'm sorry, actually, I wanted to check in on this. Was there anything that you disliked or questioned?
Not at all. There's one more canon connection. We got to
go for it.
Obi-Wan Kenobi and his favorite little statement here. Now is the time.
Very, very true. Yeah. Thank you for going back for the Kenobi canon.
No, absolutely. As far as dislike your question, no, I think you said some great stuff up top of just what this episode kind of felt. It does have that feel. I mean, I'm joking. It's a fun kind of like, oopsie, we forgot to get to this. Now we get a chance. And again, in my memory, I thought this was at least two episodes. It was kind of pleasantly shocked to find it was one. So I think anything there is we've already discussed.
Yeah, yeah. I, you know what? I'll go back for another Kenobi canon connection. I like that it was another moment where Kenobi was hanging from a ledge.
That's true, too. Yes.
Now is the time to hang from a ledge, says Obi-Wan Kenobi. No, there wasn't anything else I disliked or questioned other than, oh, man, I wish that season 6 had been longer and this had been, you know, a couple episodes. It would have been pretty fascinating to see, like, okay, well, what if the Jedi didn't just have a conversation about feeling trapped? What if they explored a little bit, you know? Mm-hmm. What if they tried, experimented with, you know, getting the word out and ran some things down and you could really see and feel their fear of losing control, you know?
Yeah.
I think a more robust debate between the Jedi or actually seeing in action their fear, you know? I think that's the only thing that I question is, like, it would have been great to have even more.
Maybe we would have gotten that scene where they go to Bail and said, hey, this is what's going on. Should we tell people? And Bail goes, oh, no, no, no. We can't tell anybody.
No, 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 no. Or like, yeah. Or
yeah.
They ask Rex and he's like, yeah. I mean, not to just to shove the blame onto Rex and Bail, but to like have that
no.
have that fear reflected or yeah. Yeah.
Totally agree with that.
Excellent. But this one is a compact, fun, exciting episode, which means we have a slightly shorter episode of Clone Wars Report than normal. Nothing else that I wanted to touch on, because you were sure to mention Val O'Rum. If you could have a figure of any character from this episode or any merch of any kind, who or what do you want?
I swear I'm not poking fun at him. I really feel for him. He's a tragic character. I do want a Sillman with Grubworm's playset.
What do you have, like the Grubworms are on like a little track and you can hide them from Sillman?
Yeah, it could be like 6-inch Black Series, to scale, or it could be like a Funko Pop with little cute Funko Grubworms. Might be better.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I have two action figures that I want. I want just a Sifo Dyas action figure because he's a great design and his lightsaber is so cool.
True.
And then they talk about it a lot, about what actually happened to his body. You know, who killed him, who cremated him, who got the remains. Ultimately, we're told that Tyrannus got the remains. We didn't get to see it, but I'd like to see whatever, you know, a great Sifo Dyas action figure that comes with whatever elaborate container, what exquisite container.
Yeah.
Dooku has Sifo Dyas's ashes in.
Well, yeah. Dark, but I love it.
And with my endless desire for more Obi-Wan action figures, we need a specific action figure of Obi-Wan with green glowing cocktail. Damn it, we need it.
Love that. You got to do that. Yeah.
All right. Next up, season 6, episodes 11 through 13, Yoda learns to begin the path to becoming a Force spirit. Excited to discuss that. Ken, what should the moral of this episode of the Clone Wars Report be?
Oh, always have food for your grubworms, but more importantly, do not let the dark secrets of your podcast fester.
The truth will come out about your podcast. Find a way to face the light. Great. Where can people find us?
Hey, we are the Force Center Podcast. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcasts available on a lot of different spots, including Acast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. You can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. We also want to let you know that at Star Wars Celebration on that Thursday at 2 p.m., we will be on the podcast stage with Alex and Molly and their Star Wars Explained show. Look for us there. You can find me at Ken Napsok or go to my website, kennapsok.com. Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And you can go to my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my other comedy adventures. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Valorum, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there. Especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts, Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.